This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Wings thanks Rabble Podcast Network for carrying our programs and urges listeners to contribute to their fundraiser. Please visit rabble.ca/donate today. Today on Wings.
Joy of resistance. We have found this joy in resistance. For those who gain by keeping women down, we say your numbers up, don't underestimate our persistence. Joy of resistance. We have found this joy in resistance. We got a way to go before we're free. We're keeping organized together. We have come a long distance. Joy, joy of resistance. Sisters of the joy of resistance. No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy.
This is the Joy of Resistance, multicultural feminist radio at WBAI. My name is Fran Luck, and welcome to the Resistance Show.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
There's welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. Joy of Resistance is a regular women's program on community radio WBAI in New York City. The January 8, 2017 show highlighted resistance to a looming U.S. presidential inauguration. Here's executive producer Fran Luck.
Well, with the Trump administration less than 2 weeks away, women and many other people are getting into full resistance mode. Why are they resisting? Well, most of you know, there are plans to take away the rights that people have fought for decades, for generations. Women stand to lose the right of legal abortion, affordable birth control, entitlements that we as the poorest segment depend on, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, our health care, a climate of hate where racists and misogynists are feeling free to act out with thousands of incidents already reported, the very real possibility of fascism. So we are going to be talking tonight about some major resistances that are coming up around the inauguration. The first one is the Women's March on Washington on January 21st with local actions in a lot of cities. The second one is the Women's Strike, called by National Women's Liberation for January 20th and 21st. And the third one is the campaign of Refuse Fascism, which actually wants to try to stop Trump and Pence before they take the reins of power. And as a special treat, and to get us in the mood to resist, we have Judy Gorman here live in the studio, and she's going to be singing us resistance songs as we go along. Get out a paper, a pencil, a pen, a device in which you key things in, because you're going to get information on how to plug in to the resistance that seems to be burgeoning all over the place. We are moving into our first segment, and I want to introduce to you our associate producer for this evening, Farah Diaz-Tello. Farah Diaz-Tello is a reproductive justice activist attorney. She has been the senior counsel for National Advocates for Pregnant Women, and she is currently serving with the self-induced abortion legal team. Good evening, Farah.
Hi, glad to be here.
Tell us about the Women's March on Washington.
Absolutely. So I don't need to tell you that our president-elect has made sexist comments about women journalists who dared to question him. He's made derogatory and racist remarks about women who have participated in his own pageant. And of course, he bragged about sexually assaulting women and accused his victims of lying when they came forward. This has been a call to action for millions. To quote Kira Johnson, the executive director of Unite for Reproductive and Gender Equity, we're always asking when people are going to be moved to take to the streets. Well, it's happening now. We're very fortunate to have a special guest today. We have Teresa Shook joining us on the line from Hawaii. Teresa is the one who started it all, who created the initial group that went viral on Facebook. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you very much.
So, first of all, How did this get started, and did you ever expect that it could become this big?
I never expected it. I hoped so in my heart of hearts, but I'm just overwhelmed and overjoyed that it actually came to be.
Now, we've heard criticism from the right that people protesting Trump's election should get over it, or worse, that protests aren't productive. What's this march trying to accomplish?
Actually, we're not calling it a protest, although everyone is free to march for their own personal reasons. So one of our hashtags is #WhyIMarch, because it's an inclusive march in solidarity, standing up to protect the rights we have because of the rhetoric of this administration, of the election process. We saw the bigotry and the hatred and the denigration of women and people of color. And so we're standing in solidarity to show that those aren't our values and we will not tolerate losing ground. It's us coming together to make a stand to say we're watching, we're vigilant, we're here, and we're not going to let you take those rights away.
So tell us a little bit about how it came together online, because this is really a phenomenon that is very peculiar to the digital age, and I'd love to share that with our listeners.
Okay. I'm 5 hours behind everyone, and so I got up the next day knowing that he had won, feeling really depressed and discouraged and thinking, you know, what happened? How could this happen? And it really woke me up. Probably I was a little too apathetic before that. And so I got on this Facebook group and I started chatting with women. And a lot of women were there saying the same thing. What happened? How can this be? This is not who we are. And so everyone is feeling helpless and hopeless. So when I feel that way, I want to do something. So then I got this idea to march, because in the past, marching has brought about change when it's in mass, when there's a lot of people. So I said, I think we should march. And it just kept scrolling by in the comments because everyone is commenting. And I just kept saying it in different ways. We should march in D.C. and say, welcome to your first day of office. Finally, one woman said, her name was Jamie, she said, I'm in. And then I went off, created a Facebook event, made it private because we were trying to keep out trolls at that time, and went back on, said, okay, I've created it. I'm inviting some of you. You can invite friends. And went to bed with about 40 women coming and woke up to more than 10,000 coming and 10,000 interested.
That's amazing. That is truly
incredible. It was amazing. I woke up, I'm having my coffee, I opened my Facebook, and I was flooded with messages of support and wanting to volunteer their time to help make it happen. And also thousands of friend requests, because at that point, no one could get an invitation unless they were invited.
So, Teresa, what's one thing that you would like listeners to take away about this march and why they should be a part of it?
First of all, once you show up together and your shoulders to shoulder, you feel responsible for those people that you're with, and that's what we're there for, standing up for each other. So we're responsible for one another. Take this energy home to where you live, and when Congress tries to do something you don't like, get on the phone. Send an email. It's going to be each individual's job to be vigilant.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate your joining us.
My pleasure.
So, as a reminder, the march is taking place in D.C. January 21st, and you can find more information at womensmarch.com. The march will be starting at Independence Avenue and 3rd Street Southwest near the Capitol at 10 a.m. If you're coming from New York City, it's Women's March NYC. If you don't have transportation already, it may be difficult to find it, but you can march right here in New York City at Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza near Trump World Tower and the UN. You can find more information on that at womensmarchonnyc.com. So one of the issues that arose early on in the planning of this march was race. The march, at least in outward perception, was organized by a group of white women, and the initial name, the Million Women March, echoed the Million Women March in Philadelphia, which was convened by black women. centering communities of color is key to the survival of our democracy, and nowhere is that more clear than in the results of the election. As we know, 53%, more than half of white women, voted for Trump, and this is compared to black women, 94% of whom voted for Clinton, and according to the Latino Decisions poll, 86% of Latinas voted for Clinton. Fortunately, the National Organizing Board is now comprised mostly of women of color, including Tamika Mallory, Linda Sarsour, and Carmen Perez, who are longtime racial justice and anti-police violence activists. So this Women's March echoes shifts from the last major feminist march, the 2004 March for Women's Lives, where nearly 1.2 million people came to Washington to rally for reproductive rights, health, and justice. This was at the urging of leaders of the reproductive justice movement that the name and the frame shifted from the March for Choice to the March for Women's Lives. And what made that march so successful was the key decision to take the vision and leadership of women of color seriously. So I want to share with you this voice from the 2004 march who spoke to Joy of Resistance at the time that it happened.
Billy Avery on the phone. Hi, Billy.
Yes, hi.
I'm so glad that you could join us today. What a treat. Billy Avery, for those who don't know, is a founder of the National Black Women's Health Project, now named the National Black Women's Health Imperative.
Good morning, Billy.
Good morning.
She opened one of the first reproductive rights clinics after Roe v. Wade, the Gainesville Women's Health Center, and she is a founder of the Joy of Resistance Collective. Billy Avery, how'd you like the march, which I know you helped organize?
It was wonderful. It was actually very, very uplifting, and it was such a good thing for all of us to be there together, because we needed some of the isolation to be sort of broken down, and you get a perspective of yes, yes, yes. You know, it was great. I've never seen that many people, I don't think, anywhere ever. It was incredible.
Well, you were in part responsible for that, Billy.
Well,
I know you were just working hard.
You know, a lot of people, yeah, a lot of people. The Imperative worked very hard to get people there, and had a real triumph in that on the National Steering Committee level, it not only included the large majority organization, but it also included the National Latino Institute and the Black Women's Health Imperative.
So you just heard Billy Avery, involved in the 2004 March for Women's Lives. We'd like to hear your voices. We asked listeners to call in and tell us why you're marching, and you answered. So here are some of the women who will be marching on January 21st.
Hi, I'm Meredith Knight from Austin, Texas. I'm marching because this election was a profound shock to me, and I found myself talking a lot about engagement and then realized, hey, you know, I'm not really that engaged myself. There's just so much work to be done to better people's lives, and I grew up thinking that was the goal of government, and I think that women are primed to do that work. You know, we lead the majority of households in this country, and I think it's time we got the representation in government that we deserve. And there are just so many problems to conquer, and it's become completely obvious to me that if we want real change and politics that work for us, then we have to do it ourselves. And that's what I want. I don't want to drain the swamp. I want to flood it with new ideas and new people and new passions. And I think women are key to that. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Neela Ghoshal, and I'm calling from Nairobi, Kenya, to let you know that here in Nairobi, we are also organizing a sister march in solidarity with the Women's March on Washington. The group of us who are organizing are both progressive Americans living in Kenya, as well as Kenyans and others living here who understand that women's rights are human rights, that these rights are interconnected all around the world. And we are very concerned about the impact that changes in U.S. policy will have on reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights, and other rights that affect women, not just in the U.S., but all around the world, including here in Kenya. So we're going to be marching in Nairobi on January 21st to raise our voices in solidarity with the women who are marching in the U.S. and to send a clear message that this is a global struggle. And we look forward to continuing to collaborate with women in the U.S. and around the world. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Raquel, and I'm marching in Arizona because this is our time. Women need to raise their voices so girls can have choices.
Thank you to everybody who called in and shared your story. As a reminder, the march is taking place in D.C. January 21st, and you can find more information at womensmarch.com. And now I'll hand it back over to Fran.
Hey, thank you so much for that great segment, Farah Diaz-Tello.
On Wings. This is the Joy of Resistance, Multicultural Feminist Radio, aired on WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York and surrounding states. The January 8, 2017 show highlighted resistance to a looming U.S. presidential inauguration. Here's executive producer Fran Luck.
And now we are going to have a real incredible treat. We have Judy Gorman in the studio. Judy, why don't you tell us what you were about to sing for us?
In 2004, I had the enormous privilege of singing at the March for Women's Lives, and I was asked to write the song for the march, and I stayed up all night, and this is what I wrote.
For children to be safe, they must be wanted. Women to be whole, we must be free. There are women put in prisons, prisons put in women, but our history need not be our destiny, and we won't back up. No, we won't bow down. We're standing by the water like that tree, and ever moving like the water, so will we march for women's lives. For women to be free. When will we be safe in our own bodies? Free to give birth when and if we choose. Church and state may legislate out of fear and out of hate, but it's women, men, and children who will lose. Oh no, we won't back up, and we won't bow down. We're standing by the water like that tree, and ever moving like the water, so will we march for women's lives, for women to be free. Our destiny, our lives hang in the balance. If we are not for women, who will be? There are women put in prisons, prisons put in women, but our history need not be our destiny. Oh no, we won't back up, and we won't bow down. We're standing by the water like that tree, and ever moving like the water, so will we march for women's lives, for women to be free. For women's lives, for women to be free.
Thank you, Judy Gorman. We are so proud to have you sing that piece of history. It's really a historic song. 1.5 million people came to Washington. And we're going to outdo that on January 21st, and we're going to keep marching this time because we have to. And we're now going to move to our second segment with Stephanie Colgard, who is an organizer with National Women's Liberation. And another important major thing that is going on is a woman's strike. Stephanie, why don't you tell us about it?
Sure, definitely. Well, to start with, what we are striking for is an end to racist and sexist assaults and all forms of bigotry, reproductive freedom, full access and no coercion, national health care for all, a $15 minimum wage for all workers, no exceptions, protection and expansion of Social Security, child care free like the public schools and paid family leave, and respect. On our strike website, we have it spelled out, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. And what we are striking from is paid jobs, emotional labor, childcare, housework, cooking, fake smiles, dishes, errands, groceries, makeup, and more. So you can strike from whatever emotional burden you have in your life.
Yeah.
And right now our, you know, most short-term goal is reaching 20,000 pledges. So far we're up to over 2,000 from all over the United States. We've also gotten pledges from Canada, which is amazing. It's so great that we have so much global support for this movement. And we recommend that women strike today at womenstrike.org. So just women, singular, womenstrike.org.
Okay. Well, one of the things that really is different about this strike is that it's not just a strike against paid labor. One of the really outstanding things that's in your literature is that it is a strike against women's unpaid labor. So can you talk about why you have that emphasis?
Yes, definitely. Well, most importantly, the incoming administration is promising to cut, undermine, privatize, or eliminate every social contract, from public schools to Medicare to Social Security. And as you and your listeners are probably aware, the Senate just recently voted to repeal the ACA, which will be disastrous for everyone, especially women and working families. And the government and this administration expects the family, quote unquote, by which they mean women, to fill in the gaps and pick up the pieces. And the strike is to say, no, we won't. The strike is a warning, and our work can no longer be taken for granted.
Yeah. That's a major statement, that women pick up the slack when the government, when our government with our tax dollars stops giving us support, and we are really holding up the whole system.
Exactly, we are.
You know, Stephanie, we have a caller now.
Oh, wonderful, excellent.
Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hi there. We wanted to ask you your reasons for striking. Go ahead.
My name is Jeanette, and I work in an industry that, although is dominated by women, I witness and have experienced the unfair treatment in the office on a daily basis. Everything from being paid $15,000 less than a male colleague who had the same level of responsibility, same job description as me, to being sexually harassed in the office. And so I am striking for those reasons because I feel as though the emotional labor that I have to undertake at work to make people feel comfortable, fake smiles, and all sorts of things that I have to do in addition to my job, I'm tired of it. And just want to be liberated and want to do the same for my sisters in solidarity.
Cool. Thanks, Jeanette. I mean, that's just infuriating that you have to deal with this at work. So this is why we need to strike and stand up and to say no.
And this is also the first of many strikes.
Yes.
This is a kind of warning, isn't it? That
right.
Women, because we hold up the system, if we strike and really get it organized big time, we can really, really stop things in their tracks. And this, of course, is being organized by National Women's Liberation, which you can reach at
womensliberation.org.
So thank you so much, Stephanie, for that great report. And now we are going to move to Sansara Taylor of refusefascism.org. Sansara, are you there?
Hi, Fran. I'm glad to be with you.
So glad you are here. I understand you're in Washington, D.C. I want you to tell our audience about this rather incredible campaign that wants to get people out in the street and actually stop Trump and Pence, and tell us why you think that's necessary to do at this point and what has been going on around that action.
Yeah, so I'm here to talk about a movement that has come into being, bringing together people from a wide range of different perspectives, called refusefascism.org, to do exactly what you described, to stop Trump and Pence before they consolidate their hands on power. And the reason we're calling for this is Trump is a fascist. He campaigned on a platform of fascism, open boasting of sexual molestation, torturing the family members of people accused of wrongdoing, of packing Guantanamo with, quote, bad dudes, racism, Muslim registry, and crushing and destroying this space in civil society for dissent and protest. And with a fascist, you can't sit back and wait and see, and you can't even just register your opposition and continue to fight in new conditions for the next 4 years and look to the future. They have to be prevented from consolidating their hands on the reins of state power and the ability to carry out their agenda, which really will be a reign of terror on top of a reign of terror, and it will be immeasurably more difficult for people to resist if there's the space left to do that at all. And so this is a qualitative leap. We are calling for people to flood the streets of D.C. That's why I'm here, starting January 14th, and then to stay in the streets every night after night, growing from hundreds to thousands, from thousands to millions, to create such a mass outpouring. staying in the streets and creating such a political crisis through our mass political resistance that this regime is prevented from consolidating its hands on the reins of the state, preventing the inauguration or preventing it from being able to be fully consolidated and actually ousting Trump and Pence.
A lot of us are very excited by this campaign. We're not sure. We think it's a long shot to stop actually the inauguration at this point. But I know you have a reasoning for why that is, perhaps if not probable, at least possible. Can you tell us that?
Well, I think that this is actually possible. I'm not saying it's definitely not a guarantee, and it's definitely going to be a fight. The basis for doing this lies in two things that come together. One, there is such an extremeness, such a ripping up and shredding of the cohering norms of this country and this country's position in the world. It's so extreme that it has produced both deep fractures and conflicts among the rulers, and you see them fighting this out in different ways. Right now you see it with the intelligence community and the Trump regime, and they have their differences, and their profound differences. But none of that goes anywhere good without a huge upsurge from below, and then that can interact with the divisions at the top to force them to find another way to resolve things, like they're doing right now in South Korea. Right. And then I'm down in D.C. right now, and we're calling on everybody to flood D.C. starting January 14th, that's next Saturday, to come down to D.C. to McPherson Square for a 4 o'clock march that goes into the night. And then night after night, day after day, we're growing and building these protests. And if people can't make it to D.C., they should organize them everywhere they are. I know there will be plans in New York City starting the 14th and growing night after night everywhere. So that by the time you have this inauguration, you have millions, literally millions and tens of millions who are in the streets fighting to stop this. We need to do something that we've never done before. But people look back and they say, oh, if I lived in Nazi Germany, I would have stood up. I never would have gone along. Well, here it is now. And this is the moment. Our best shot to stop them is before they have power in their hands.
Sincera, I hear you loud and clear. We feel that way. Let's tell people how to plug into the many different events that are around the Refuse Fascism campaign. Go ahead.
The first I want to mention is go to the website, www.refusefascism.org. It's easy to remember because it's our mission, refusefascism.org. If you're not on the web, you can call 917-407-1286. That's 917-407-1286. We need volunteers. We need participation. We need donations. Everybody has a role to play, big or small.
Thank you so very much, Sincera and Stephanie and Farah, for being on this very important show. And thank you so much, Judy Gorman, who is about to sing us out with another resistance song.
You don't know who I am. You don't see, and I can. You don't know who I am, and I am, and I am, and I am. Turn my picture to the wall. Leave me hanging when I fall. Cross your arms each time I fall. I have a strong suspicion. In your dreams you'll hear me sing. Your sharpest words will lose their sting. I trust my intuition. You don't know who I am. You don't know, and I can. You don't know who I am, and I am, and I am, and I am.
Thanks to producer Fran Luck for audio and editing of this episode of The Joy of Resistance, Multicultural Feminist Radio, aired on WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York and surrounding states, and streaming at WBAI.org. Find more music of Judy Gorman at cdbaby.com. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org and check our page at facebook.com/wingsradio. Special thanks to your community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Lee Bana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.